Thank you, Chairperson, and all your members, colleagues. Chair, just again to confirm, I've got a consult with the Chair of the Commission. We've got two commissioners with me. We've got the Trevor Fowler and the Trevor Lauren Johnson. And then I've got the CEO of the AFFC with Dr. Kay Brown, the Research Director, Dr. John Kruger, and I've got the support staff of the AFFC and the research. So John and I will take you through the presentation, and then just to manage the way going forward, commissioners and I will go first take on responding to questions, and thereafter will be John Kay, Sheriff Hull, after sharing the discussions around that, Tayshaw on education, discussions around that, Kuluri, Lube on the physical knowledge. Chair, this presentation we bring to you in terms of Constitution Section 2020, 2014. We also bring it to you in terms of the Financial Fiscal Act of 1994. Today we're talking to you based on our short reflection on the macroeconomic and fiscal framework. We're talking to you about the division of revenue and as per your invitation. See, I'm taking you to slide 6. I indicated yesterday to you that we're experiencing technical recession and some people call it. Although there are some continued progress on some aspects, substantial poverty has continued to be reduced.
Of course, if we want to, if we need the constitution, we want to come to the position that some people call it.
Well, that's the public outcomes information that we've got. But I think we need to respond to you starting to position it properly in terms of the conversation. Other than to say that what we've seen is contracted growth in the last quarter, 1.2%. There's also been declines in almost all industries, private, secondary, and tertiary sectors. We're also experiencing a sharp decline of around 4% in gross fixed asset formation. And those are the things that contribute to where we are. Inequality remains. Like I indicated to you, depending who you speak to, the inequality moves from a 0.63 to a 0.69 to a 0.71. Clearly there's a need to look at talking about all this data and showing us the final only. Basic education results in life expectancy, as I indicated to you yesterday, a 10-year we're talking about, men lives longer since 1994-1996. Females live longer than men, so that's the average age of 67. It's an important matter for appropriation discussion. The economy is decelerating, continuous growth is slipping. We also experience a tremendous mass of unemployment. Clearly the unemployment number is becoming too much. It's high risk to us as a country. And we do have a sense of a state of unemployment. There are government failures, and financial and delivery crises in the key SOEs, revenue shortfalls, expenditure pressures, mounting deficits, debt service costs, and obviously there's an urgent need to consolidate and also to guard against us losing our gains that we've made over the years. In terms of consolidating the fiscus, the slowdown expenditure growth to arrest deficit and the debt. Moderate our plans for, we need to moderate our plans for certain infrastructure funds. Reduce provision of wasteful payments. Then we keep taxes stable and improve the tax system. This is around the inefficiency. And obviously there's a view from the Treasury, there's a view to to rebuild, strengthen and solidify effectiveness. On the road between the economy, lots of structural changes. Many institutions have recommended quite a number of structural changes. What we are looking is structural changes in the network industries. Look at competition, export, labor intensive sectors, especially agriculture, given agriculture itself in terms of its contribution to the GDP, tourism and small business. We're also saying that there's a need to look at a capable state. Some starting to talk about the neoliberal state. Where policy, where there's policy certainty and policy cogent implementation of policy. Our response, thank you, the vice president, is on consolidation. We think the shut businesses, it has to start urgently. The space must be realistic. We're asking questions around the wage matter, because the public sector wage. The one issue is the issue of credibility. That is the issue whether the decision taken will be solidified over multi-year period and whether everybody will stick to it and comply with it. But clearly, the economic pressure suggested that, especially with the outliers on the way to the UN, which we experienced this year, there's a need for shifts in. There's also the question of, is it realistic? We worried about potential exiting of competent professionals within the public service. And you probably know and note that mostly within the public service, those that work in the administration, the attrition rate and registration are slower than those that will be affected. Professional categories, and here obviously we'll be talking about people like teachers, nurses, prosecutors, the frontline staff, and teachers. So we're worried about the unintended consequences when it comes to that. So last, which is a one that we raised yesterday, and the question whether the civil servants must take the brunt of being the only contributor to cut to the one. We would like to raise the issue again of the possible spread in terms of the solidarity of the private sector that needs to be considered, given that many of the given that we are contracted state with anything, where the private sector is in contract with government to deliver services to the supply chain, isn't there indeed also to look at how we are able to create that level of solidarity that the private sector covers all of those costs. And then there's the third thing, remuneration within the other part of the public sector, which is public sector institutions, SOEs and public entities. And there's the question about the president raises the prospect of the remuneration of the framework for state on enterprises. The issue is this, the remuneration policy or framework has been coming on for a number of years. And chair and members, the view is that this hits at the nature and extent of the shareholder model, where you have a board and a CEO that makes certain decisions. We have a shareholder, which is the cabinet as a whole. The minister identified, but if things go wrong, the government takes the blame. There's a need to relook at that shareholder model, but important then to align the pay scales of those within the SOE. So that's a fairness question that we're raising. So on the one hand, public service, civil service salary, on the other hand, can be spread to other public sector institutions and private enterprises. And then the third thing is how do we share this with the private sector? So the view is that by doing that, if we critically reflecting on this, On the one hand, we're suggesting that there should be a much more clear way to proceed with this burden, but also probably there needs to be a new look at what is the shareholder compact that we're talking about. Sorry, this social contract that we're talking about, this cooperation between all, between the state, between market industries, between citizens, through their organizations, and civil servants, to be able to get us out of this situation. What we've noticed also that, the number of structural change that has been proposed in terms of pushing the growth strategy, etc. We feel it's an ambitious strategy for a state of constraints. We need a more moderate approach to strategy on ensuring growth. And part of that is obviously to look at public sector overall productivity and not just one area. We need to be more purposeful in terms of focus on the big drivers. We have the whole question of climate change. There's the issue of rapid technological change, the disruptive nature of technology to various industries, but society as a whole. And there's obviously the need to continuously take recognition of population shifts, population pattern shifts, movement of people, movement of all citizens in the country. Obviously there are risks, but there are also opportunities. When we talk about the capable and efficient state, and I want to say again that Tom raised the other president again raised the entrepreneurial state. Seems to be moved from a developmental state to a capable state, now the entrepreneurial state. But the issue is that we need to look at factors behind policy uncertainty, and we raised that some yesterday in the weak implementation of it. And I want to reconfirm our view around the policy uncertainty is that because policies are contested terrain of what we mentioned is the winners and losers, so industry is contested, the government puts policies in place, civil society information contest, we get into the court, things get rolled back, things get sent back to Parliament to relook at. At the end of the day, the policy uncertainty, the notion of policy uncertainty is shared for all social actors, state and not state. So we think that policy uncertainty is a conflict of interest, and again it's your of and losers. So the grid work that I spoke to you about yesterday, just to reconfirm, on the ETOLs, you know the story on the ETOLs, and you know also that the ETOLs, the government guarantees revenue, raised guarantee, there's a raised revenue, and you pay off your ETOLs, it's not the same as the other guarantee that you find in ESCOM and others. The whole issue of followed by the Western Cape contesting from 2 or 3 years ago, government court action, relative to what is happening in South Pain. There's the mining charter, the Minister of the Executive and the mining chambers that are left, which is expected to be a continuous problem that we face. The right hailing, the tension between the Ubers and the Uber taxis and other methods related to transport. And linked to that is the digital question in terms of digitalization of the economy. But then we also talk about digital migration. There is the LSI issue, which is again, while the view is that you need to create, ensure that access, there's quality, there's efficiency in the health services, there's also the role of the private sector in medical insurances, there's the public sector role in the, and we proceed to that because it's such an important part. The transfer issue, members will know that there's a real problem because of productivity within the Western Cape and the relationship between CASA and Metro Rail and how that gets resolved. The whole ESCOM restructuring, what does it really mean?
who are the interest holders, who's contesting, who's benefiting from certain interests, how are the IPP and ESCOM role playing into that. And then there's obviously the whole issue about social security and social protection, and the potential reform that's also to be dealt with, proposed the 2020 legislation because of the financing. And then lastly, the climate transition. We know that there are certain institutions that will contest just around natural resources, environmental impact studies, etc. But with the bigger question that we face is our domestic environment and our neighbors and issues around drought and how does the industry affect here around agriculture. Chair, with that, I would like to hand over to John.
This then comes after we've made those cuts to the 2019 budget. What does the picture look like? And there's two basic stories here. From 2016-17 to 2019-20, National has gotten the biggest share of the expenditure. So a shift in favor of National, and that's really driven there by two things, but mostly by support to the state-owned enterprise. So that's the ESCOM SOA. And then over the next 3 years we see the share of National declining a bit. There's still significant support here to SOE, but it takes us down and takes down the share of the National government. So we've had a bit of a shooting out of the money going to National because of the financial support to SOE. Now over the next 3 years the provinces and local spend somewhat. So generally in the numbers we look at three things: how we change it compared to last year, what is the distribution between the 2013 and 2013, So what does this now mean? That provinces got less money or more money next year? And national got less or more money? So here, what we say in the real fund trend, so money people will have in their accounts to spend. For national, it's priced up next year, or this financial year. It's basically again S1 and SAA. And then we see that the national government grows well below inflation. Local governments and provincial governments grow at about, about 2% per year. So that comes to the question of austerity. So national government will experience austerity. Local government and provincial government is protected somewhat against austerity in the sense that they still have more money. Of course, our provinces and local governments, and that's what we say in the last 2 points, they are confronted by a rising population, more people needing services, more children going to secondary school than in the past, and so on. More citizens needing basic services. But even if that grows at 2%, there's quite a bit of service delivery pressure in provinces and local governments. So basic school in terms of real funds, significant pressure on national government departments, local and provincial, a bit more cushioning, but also a tough task given the change in the need for services. This one just says what you tried to say in a table form, so you can see there, over the next 3 years, national department allocations declining by 1.9% a year, 2%. So there's real cuts there. In money by the local government, provincial government grows by 1.4%. Above inflation, especially the ones that are able to achieve, and the local government also by about 2% above inflation. So that is really the picture of the division of revenue. So yes, there are cuts to baseline, but the real money going to provinces and local still increasing, but national taking a bit of a hit, partly because we stopped paying out to hopefully to the state-owned enterprises. So that's of course one of the risks in the budget, that national departments are going down because we think the support to SOEs are under control. There won't be big payments in the two outer years, and that might be optimistic. There's also something that we need to upload too much detail, number of technical and other program adjustments. So there's a downward shift on the education infrastructure grant, which given the need for infrastructure is not a good situation. There's one thing where we hope that our members will share our happiness that the government found some additional money for early childhood development. Early childhood development, we've got a conditional grant currently of about $1 billion, and that I think in terms of this proposal is set to double. So that's a small amount of money for a big investment in a very vibrant sector in our society, the government and the private sector, the NGOs work quite well together. So we think that is in a otherwise weak budget, that is a positive thing that's been done. Housing settlement, some money is ring-fenced for the mining town. In health, there's a bit of a reshuffling of things, some indirect grants becoming direct or going directly to the provinces. So it's really money for staff and money for NHI being shaped a bit differently to make it work better. And then on agriculture, there's for research. Part of the grant is taken international to get research to target that field. I think this is just this slide. Look at the baseline adjustments for local grants, and it just shows there are two types of grants going to local government: the capacity building grants, there are the infrastructure grants, and members were able to see that the baseline is really 20% there on the universal service one. So the big grants generally are quite hard to balance the budget, and we're concerned about that because those are on infrastructure, which we really know the municipalities are badly needed. Capacity building grants, which is sympathetic to people's mixed feelings about those, because questions have been raised about those capacity building grants, and members could note that the Treasury has, or government has, another one here, one to help with the revenue collection in municipalities. So there's an extra one coming there. We just make the point that the expenditure performance on the local grants don't look that bad. One that's been cut quite severely is the Integrated National Electrification Program. That one has continued to struggle to spend, so there's this cutback might be a good thing. Then we come to spending, the overall spending, so we've looked at the split between local and provincial. For the spending, we really look at four things. Firstly, again, overall baseline changes, so what are the big shifts at the top? Then we look briefly at the spending by function. We look at very briefly at some national departments, and then we look at the item, whether it goes to wages or whatever. So in terms of baseline adjustment, members would have heard the big headline numbers. So against budget 2019, government proposes cutting baselines by 200 billion. 101 billion of that comes from program cuts. The other 160 billion, and that is of course the contentious one, is from reductions to wage allocations. That's where we need the renegotiation to fit into that margin. So we take away the only way that can work is if we get the renegotiation of the wage agreement to currently make provisions for higher than inflation adjustments. So there's the cut, 2,060 billion, and then 111 billion is added to a number of things. Companies, more than we expected for the last budget, 60 billion, or SAA, which come mostly. There are some things which we thought would work better in the previous budget. We thought that a lot of civil servants will go for voluntary severance packages, and so we used today as well. That didn't work, so that change has to be reversed, something we tried to do. And then there's also program allocations, and there's a table in the budget review that goes through those. The one allocation is the addition to the early childhood development that I referred to. There's a new innovation fund that government is proposing, which there's very little detail about. There's also that conditional grant on financial and revenue collection that is added there. So small bits and pieces added there under program allocations. So I'm not going to do that one, that's just the baseline allocations over here. So here then we've got what happens to the different big ticket functions. So government basically those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 functions and their debt service costs. So you see learning and culture store is the largest one, and in nominal terms it's been increasing. We look at the real numbers soon. Health has also been increased in social development. Really the second, those are the social grants, welfare services, the second biggest one, then health number three. Number four now on this picture, or really number, it's becoming number two, I didn't think it happened that quickly, debt service costs. Debt service costs over the last few years have taken over from health as the second biggest. So we've got learning and culture is the biggest spending area. Then you've got social development, debt service costs coming in, health, then community development, which are roads, water, those ones, and then economic development, which is DPI, partnership with science and innovation, and so on. And then peace and security also, pretty large one, and then the smaller one, the general public service. We would also get its money, but it's the big ones are Treasury, EPSA, and EPSA under the general public service. So this is where the money's going and the nominal terms how it's increasing. The next slide is, can we identify trends here? So we look here at how the real annual average growth, how over the next 3 years the functions will be growing. And here we see quite a change. So the blue lines, the last 3 years, the red lines, the next 3 years. The growth that dominates here is debt service costs. So our debt is going up, so we've got to pay more interest. Might go up further to our rating, income after the budget. But what we see here on the left hand side is that there was a rapid growth in what we can call the social services, learning and culture, that includes students, health, social development, that is general. Learning and culture spending become negative net growth. That is about what changes signal for provincial education. That basically means fewer teachers, bigger classes, and threatening our gains over the last 20 years in education quality. So that's the one thing happening, those blue lines shrinking, and they go again. What we then see, what's picking up a bit, is community development, economic development, so that's infrastructure investment, but also more direct support of the economy, basic services. And then where we see the next year, is under the zero, peace and security, so that's our police, our institutions, our justice system, and then also our general public service. Most people think there's a lot of fat there to be cut, the general public service, and also there are people that do important work there. Like that essay that's feeding the pinch, they are basing numbers out. And that line there, they are part of that problem that we see with negative growth in general public services. Also on peace and security, one department that's there that performs a very basic function for our citizens in home affairs. And that line there also signals in a sense pressure on home affairs and the rest of our justice cluster. So that in a sense the picture, perhaps it shifts a bit away from the social services towards community development, economic development, and the nation in a sense asked for that, but big pressure on general public services. Just pointing out some national departments, so there are some that we could call protected, so there are some things we see in line with the policy getting more, so Department of Cooperative Governance, and apologies for the CA there, growing strongly, and that is money really going to local government. So through the old Department of Cooperative Governance, there's some protection there. Also social development, which are the all important grants, continuing to protect those, and then small business development in the National School of Government quite a bit. I don't know what the members of you will be about whether that National School of Government will lead a turnaround in government. I might perhaps be optimistic, but certainly it seems government is putting some of its money there to help fix the civil service. Under pressure, as we show here, Statistics South Africa, a budget that has been under pressure for a long time, and a very important job, because we all know that data is changing in the world, data is becoming more important. That requires Statistics South Africa, that's at the peak of their game, taking us on to the fourth industrial revolution. We talk a lot about agriculture, the bottom line budget shows we're not putting our money where our mouth is. UN settlements, the grants there are being cut, reflecting perhaps a bit of skepticism of the impact of human settlement spending. We know it's a very important area. How is there making those vibrant human settlements? And then also trade, industry, and competition. We see real decline probably there. Also, a bit of uncertainty about the impact of those settlements. Lastly, then quickly, third perspective, so we looked at the broad functions of some of the departments, just look at the spending by item or economic classification. So what does government use to do what it needs to? It needs people, that's compensation. It needs computers and industry that features services, and it's got to pay its debt. Then also some things government, central and provincial government, we don't do it ourselves. We outsource it on the universities to other SOEs and so on, and that's really what the transfers and subsidies are about. We think Department of Higher Education can't teach students themselves, so they pass on money to the university, so that's where transfers and subsidies come in. Capital assets is partly about both the roads, all the other infrastructure for basic services. One line that you see here that's been jumping a bit is payment for financial assets, and that's again the SOE expand. So it jumped from 9 billion in 2016 to 65 billion in 2019. It comes down, we hope, between 27 billion and 2023. So that's the big picture here is, of course, that compensation is about a third of government budget, goods and services, transfers and subsidies also about a third, and then capital assets. So the next slide just gives the same information just in terms of proportion. So you see it there. Compensation of employees, 15%. Goods and services, 13%. Transfers stay very flat there, 33%. So there's not really a movement on how much government does itself in central and provincial governments, but it passes on to local governments, SOEs, universities. Payment for capital assets took a bit of a knock, recovered a bit. The big thing that people see here is that too much the compensation of employees? And certainly the government and the budget make the point that this is getting too high. Very difficult to decide what exactly is the right number there. But I think everybody agrees we've got to work also on the capital assets and push that up, and that's so the last slide is just again also not much new information, but again shows the growth in these categories. So going forward, where will the money be? Compensation, minus 1.2% a year over the next 3 years. That's of course the strategy of controlling the budget. We hope to pay less in real terms on compensation for wages. Goods and services also coming down slightly. No interest payments going up a lot every year. There's a bit of capital assets, a positive growth in capital assets, and then we see that, I'm not sure what we'll call it, but shooting up and down on financial assets as we spend on income, as they age a lot, and then that amount goes down. So I think that's the basic picture that reflects the government strategy, compensation, government wants to maintain, push a bit more into capital, and hopefully we get the spending on financial assets or support the SOEs and the control. Thank you.
We are not back to you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we? In that order. So remember that we are performing the test C. That is if you take 5, not more than 4.
Thank you, Captain. Let me welcome the presentation. Thought provoking. Chair, I think I have three questions. The first one is on the adjustment. General. In your baseline and on on your expenditure plan, it's like, there, I'm more interested in your reduction plan about the expenditure. What the presentation did change was it could show on the expenditure. But separately to reduction. I wonder if it is possible for us to be able to say, yes, this particular reduction is just but as informed by this expenditure plan. I'm not sure if it's that. Then the second one would be also that. Does the budget talk to the SONA injunction? Particularly now when you are talking the allocation. The term that you have used of the reshuffling, where you are taking from the left to the right. There is also a term that you have used there of your flex movement. In line of that, we will start to check where do you then put the SONA in action. Then the second question, Chair, would be, it's more generic. More generic. Economic growth purposes. How is the general cash flow important? How do we compare, or how is the comparative study of the rate of our borrowing versus the spend rate? On the pace at which we are spending. Is money in circulation? Or, the language that I started, is money on the move? Is there no stagnation of the money? I'm now talking of the money. Because my belief here would be that money is supposed to be, you know, more. The last one would be, can you prof compare for me and or contrast this budget, implication of this budget to the DA policy director? I would be apologetic if I'm ambushing you. To no longer, you know, okay with this year policy. Thank you.
Well, what director? Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation to FFC. I just wanted to make a comment and just to hear the view that education, according to my view, was it's one of the four priorities, but yet I note a downward adjustment. So I just want clarity on that. If education is one of the priorities, how come we not from the FFC side? I just want to know whether we should really make a debate about education, but I do welcome the early childhood development investments. Chairperson, I just want to cut on the electrification program with local government. I just want to know, I assume it's understanding, but I'm not sure there's any other reasons why there is a cut back to electrification. and what support is there? I think there is money allocated to local government to assist that infrastructure in livelihood education is attended to. The severance package question, I just wanted to know, if the option didn't work, what amount was actually budgeted for? How many people were earmarked to leave at a high level, of course? And what was the estimated saving, medium term, that was actually earmarked in that? And should we not revisit it, that severance package, as a way of reducing the public sector wage bill? And then the last one is, I want to make a comment on human settlements. I think we're struggling national, we should have a national system when an ID goes into the national system of human settlements, that we can see who was the beneficiaries. I'm not sure if the provinces at the moment look like they're in silence and they're speaking to each other. So it means that there's title deeds we want. There's people immediately who get houses or rent it out or even sell it. That's information we get on the ground, which defeats the whole objective of helping the poor. And I think we, government then, actually what happens, they want to come back onto the list, or people go back to informal settlements. It increases. While they do a rental stock or they sit with money that they sold the houses of and not making use of that, because the house, the title is actually to help people to come into the economic system and make use of that. That's the purpose of the title deeds. But I think we are going the other way. We're not, it's almost like the social grants where we from 9 million had to come down to 7 million or 5 million, but we went the other way where because of the economy and many other factors have gone to 16 million. Because the idea of the economy is that people must help themselves, be independent, look after their family, save for their pension, and they have a good and a better life. But I don't think that is the way, that was the intention initially, I'm sure, of what the economy must bring out, but it's not happening. But housing in particular, I would like the FFC to look into that. What can we come up with a solution to solve the problem of housing? Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Mine will be...
Thank you.
Okay. I'll be very short, Chair. I just want to check from the FCC this one. Looking at the performance of our state-owned companies, it seems as if there is a trend that takes them downward direction. Do you anticipate any situation of bailout with that particular trend, other than ESCOM and SAA, so that we perhaps right throughout the financial year we know actually there is no recovery in as far as that trend is concerned. We just want to understand that. Now, I may have missed this, but pardon me if it was touched because I just arrived late. On the waste reduction, vis-a-vis the public sector, PSCBC, bargaining council agreements, and then vis-a-vis the wage reduction. What do you anticipate as a development around this situation? Because there's a wage reduction, there's a agreement, wage reduction, 160 billion. And then what do you anticipate there, or what is your advice with regard to that issue? Because it's something that is now here, but want to get the understanding of the implication of that in terms of the budget. And with regard to Cabinet Lekgotla decision, not sure whether I'll be repeating that, but obviously they are aligned to the manifesto. Do you think in your own analysis, or as you put, or having read that, is the budget actually talking directly to the issues of resolve of the Cabinet Lekgotla, as they are put in terms of figures here? Or what is the shortfall so that one can be upfront with the understanding of the whole picture that we have given here? Now, on policy uncertainty, we know that we have been repeating this quite often. Sometimes one struggles to understand what are this list of uncertainty that is now beginning to influence the budget that we are referring to. Because there's a whole issue on policy uncertainty. I just want to understand what are you referring to in most instances? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me start on page... just around the government budget plan, the slide entitled Government Budget Plan, and consolidating the fiscal. There's been historically attempts at, as was mentioned, getting civil servants to voluntarily retire and so on, and now, of course, we see the planned reductions in staff numbers over the next 3 years. Has there been a program undertaken that identifies specific government programs that have been instituted that have subsequently been supplanted but are still funded? Many oftentimes you'll find that local governments, provincial governments, and national governments, a program is created, it's funded, it gets staffed, and then it's not meeting the outcomes it's expected. And then another program is created that generally does meet those outcomes, but you're still funding this thing. Has such an exercise ever been undertaken by the state? Then the second question is, on working to grow the economy, you've identified structural changes quite important. I tend to agree. I'd like to get the FFC's view on whether we should be pursuing vertical or horizontal industrial policy for our context, and I'd like to get their thoughts around that. Then on the consolidate and consolidation, I see that there have been all sorts of proposals around being realistic. We have 29,000 millionaire managers, people who are paid to be managers who earn more than R1 million a year. And this is administrative bloat. Does the FFC think that this is a good place to start, actually, in terms of reducing and consolidating deficits? Then on the baseline cuts and division of revenue bill, the cuts to local governments, considering that local government is already, by and large, a failing tier of government, not paying Eskom, etc., what is the FFC's view on whether or not these cuts will actually further hamper or strangle local government? And then I think my last point, Chair, is on the cuts to education. I do agree with the FFC's view that this is a concern, because what we're effectively doing is borrowing against the future of the country. We need a well-educated, healthy population in every generation to keep making progress, and I tend to agree that this is also a very bad idea, and it's the consequence of constant bailouts. I'd just like to emphasize that point. Thanks.
The aircon. So I can't hear clearly all the comments now, but clearly my colleagues will speak up from there. So you ask, can your colleagues speak up?
Can you speak to the mic? Thank you.
sorry, what's the name? I don't know why we get all of the money from the table.
If Karen is not fighting that for us.
Karen, I'm not talking to you, sweetheart. Oh, you must come to me, I must teach you how to be radical of this. thank you, Chen. Thank you to the professor and his team. Chen, the FFC makes good recommendations and good research in all of the work that they are doing. But for me, also, Chair, as a starting point, and when they are coming to the committee with all of the research that they are doing on the budget and so forth, also to guide us, maybe perhaps as a committee, we have to look, and I don't know how limited we are in terms of their mandate and the legislation, as to how we're going to structure our, because for me it's like they are giving nice and good research, and it just feels to me that it just gathers dust after this. You don't see the light of some of the recommendations and some of the good research that they are doing. So I don't know how can we stretch it or how limited we are in terms of our mandate as a portfolio committee, but I just feel that it's a waste of time if we are getting such good research and it just get a dust. So it must be a more, we must find a more progressive way in terms of working with the research and the information that they are giving us. Mine, Prof, is just with allocations to your local government, national government and provincial government. And maybe perhaps you won't see that impact right now, or you can't even perhaps answer right now as to what will the impact be of local government getting the lowest allocation yet again. Will that not hamper on service delivery to the poor? And with that allocation to local government. And maybe what has motivated that lower allocation to local government. Could it be one of the problems of the municipalities and stuff like that, that don't know how to manage their finances? What could it have been, Prof, if you have an answer for us on that one? Thank you very much.
Lots of credit, Honorable Chairman. In terms of the time, and Honorable Commander didn't get it to take it.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the Commission for the presentation. Chairperson, I'm going to be very short. My issues are related to slide 7, the technical and other provision grant adjustments. There's a program on TV that is keep on fire. if anything, I think that program also, like your special assignment and other and checkpoints, they reveal some of the things that are a problem in our society. Like, for example, you're saying for human, housing settlement or human settlement, the adjustment is down. It worries us more because you have a situation where the number of housing units that are being developed and given to our community doesn't seem to match the need at the state. Remember many years ago, during President Begin's time, there was even a target set for the eradication of informal settlements. And it is now even seems to have grown more exponentially. And also the challenges of the choice for service delivery in areas that have not yet been proclaimed, and some of the challenges related to like for example, somebody asked a question about the INEP program and the reduction thereof, or the decision not to, because there has been underspending. That underspending necessitated by the fact that you have a target of this number, but you don't have the housing units, because the housing units are not in the names of the so-called beneficiaries that are not supposed to, or the municipalities have not as yet surveyed the areas and prepared the areas. There are so many problems that even us as politicians, when we go out in our constituencies, in our communities, we meet with some of these problems, but when we are faced with the officials and ask questions, you realize where the problem is. But the one of the concerns one that I wanted to raise, Prof, and the other commissioners were here, is the fact that you do have a situation where we seem to be having people who are fraudulently acquiring these housing units. He applies for a house, but I get it. And you will then never get a house, because in terms of the system. So the one who rents out the house, Joseph, is not necessarily probably the original owner. I have met with situations in my constituency where the person even wants to sell, and you realize the person has got many houses that he or she is selling because of this fraudulent acquisition. And then you have those who are really in need, your agent, vulnerable people. They are the ones that get swindled out of these houses. So it's worrying. But also that our human settlement policy chapter doesn't seem to take it into consideration that the influx to urban centers has created additional unstable conditions under which our people live is because of the policy that does not look at housing in rural areas. Maybe because of this, traditional leaders taking so long to determine the right to occupy, and also some challenges in that particular. I'm raising this question, Chairperson, because of what the President said last week to the House of Traditional Leaders, to help government stem the tide of urbanization, where people then end up living in slums. I'm going to be opportunistic. With the fact that we have Commissioner Fowler here amongst us, having had the experience of both the legislature and the administration at provincial and local government, and having felt the impact of the influx, what is it? I'm sure when you sit as an official or as a politician at local government, so I think that there needs to be something that the FSC can recommend about that type of fluctuating or a moving target type of situation where you don't know the person is here but the person is not here. The person is in Gauteng because he or she wants to benefit from the job opportunities or the cultural and other artistic opportunities that would be there. But the person is also based in the Northern Cape or in Northwest in Taung or Eastern Cape and all those type of things. It's those type of challenges that you are having. Do you count the person in Gauteng or do you count the person outside of Gauteng? Because some of these people also don't want to participate when it is time for SSA to do the census. The other thing, Chairperson, is FSC. What is your view with the allocation to, or the adjustment, or the impact of the adjustment on service delivery in provinces? You know, I'm looking at this thing. Look at the Northern Cape. That province is the most expensive province to deliver services, but the most underfunded because of the population, the per capita type of allocation. But what is the FSC saying in it would be the impact of this reduction in areas like that? Then there's the issue of social development. I think and any child childhood development. Was early childhood development not moved to basic education? If it's still now reflects under social development, just a clarification question. Then the issue is with regard to the wage bill, because it is now at 25%, that is what lately the minister was online on FAFM up until around the I want to know, are we running the risk in South Africa of having two major items on our budget, the debt and the wage, and then no money for programs and services? Because for me, that is worrying. But it's debt on the other side, but also the cost of our the wage bill. The other thing, in terms of you as the FSC, do you think that tourism and agriculture, which have been identified as the great potential job creators, are they adequately funded to be able to carry out that particular type of responsibility? But also, Chairperson, in conclusion, the FFC would remember they made a recommendation about the evolution of transport services, especially like your metro rail to municipality. In South Africa, there is not many of our municipalities that would be able to qualify for that. Do we do it in a piecemeal way, the one that is saying that they want it, and taking into consideration the challenges that Prasa has? Would it be a situation of funds follow function? And if it's funds follow function and where the function comes from, already there is no fund, what then would be happening to the local sphere of government? That is already burdened with a lot of the so-called unfunded mandates. So I just want to find out from the FSC whether your recommendation on the devolution of transportation, passenger rail in particular in this area, is focused on a request from the municipality or is based on a national picture that we have about the situation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you for saying, and let's welcome both organizations by the FSC. I think it is a little time on our professor should speak first. We then could be from here. But Chairperson, yesterday I asked this question and I felt that it was not answered. And I purposely, deliberately left it for today's session. Because I feel we need to get this clarity as to what is the mandate or the capacity of this this committee. I'm asking this question again today. Especially that we have got advice, guidance, and research from the FFC, so that we don't be seen to just be this committee that is so overwhelmed with information but cannot execute or cannot advise. So maybe one would need a clarity on that, so that when we get this information, we need how to execute or what is our mandate against it. And Chairperson, again, I wanted to raise the same question as Honorable Diplo to say, one of thought any type of development has been moved to basic education. So, having said that, we welcome the acting, but then, still, basic education is a priority, and it shows that it has been done, the budget has been taken down, but it's a call for concern that we are now going to have a society that is not educated, or we still have challenges, especially that we still have challenges in the basic education. And as for the housing settlement, the challenge there would still be that much as we want to agree to what was stated in the budget, but then
we still have got the challenges that are not addressed. That department is still one of the major challenge departments. So that seems to raise a serious concern to say either service delivery would not be given as expected to the people that are that it should go to. And then in terms of the surveillance challenge that was proposed by government, because we see people not opting to go, who are opting to go are those from the professional level, vis-a-vis the administrators and others. So does that mean in terms of the budget that was allocated for such activity, do you still have reserves? If we still have reserves, what is then the plan moving forward, because the initial plan did not go as planned? And the last one, Chairperson, is the cut to the municipality. One would ask, because the municipalities are the lowest level where the service delivery is being executed at, is this not in a way disadvantaging the municipalities? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. And I'm having credit from Honourable Kumane, estimating the time to meet. Honourable, before the question of Northern Cape, I was talking to the MEC finance, Northern Cape, and she was saying to me, I've got a 14 billion rand budget. And the 13 billion rand of that goes to professional of employees. So what I would like to do is that the people probably the 3D, if I think for that, we finish infrastructure and so on. So I think for me, I would like to hear the comment about the beginning of revenue for me between the provinces. That formula that if you look at try to consider that you think it should be an applicable type of a formula. And then number 12, you know that there are some court decisions taken by the judicial system, like to say everybody who's here has got the right to be in school, everybody who's here has got the right to be in hospital. Do you ever model the decision of this court decision? Or do you know what the impact of those decisions are? Or do you present them to courts when those decisions are essential for the budgetary and the community implications? If you look at the economic development allocation, it's one of the smallest allocations that we have. Yet we talk about the question of the economy, which is different. But I would like just to come to you to hear your educated comment when it comes to that. Then there is the National School of Government.
Mm-hmm.
And we always provide a resources to the School of Government. Do you think that you are getting a bit of for that money? I remember, but I think we have identified some things which are deficient in the civil service based on the failure to spend budget, overspending, overspending. So from here, we've said we're very clear that the project management skill is not there, right? It's also very clear that the contract management skill is not there. I'm just saying, I'm sure there are many other skills, but what do you think? Have you ever looked at the type of training that is there at the School of Government so that it talks to the challenges of government? If you look at I know there's more in appropriation, all departments, all SOCs, they've got legal departments. in those legal departments, you find that are highly trained people that advocate and so on. Yeah. But the legal dean of those departments is responsible for most of the structures that are coming up as the law firm in Sensi. Because if you look at it at that legal dean, so for me, two things: we either shut down the legal department in this department, or they do their work, because all that they end up doing, they end up changing people. They go and appoint an attorney and so on. I'm raising. I want to hear your comment. They've always been since 1994, and I'm talking about the savings, so we can get savings and so on. And we had an economic modeling of how much does Parliament cost us. In here. I think it's one thing that for me I would like just to be put aside and say, I know what that has been spoken about since 1994 President Mandela's time in Parliament. But I've never seen someone to come and say, yes, it's safe. I think we all know, we can see what happened down and so on. Let alone the opportunity cost associated with that. Let alone the social cost of these honorary members who don't wake up in their clinic. And then wake up the following day and say the children or something else and so on. Will FSC consider doing some modeling of this and then giving us some numbers to try and back some of the arguments that we come up with?
And then you don't talk about getting
cut. Yes, that would be out of the discussion. Why in the session, the question I'm saying, I would like to use, how much does the economic exclusion of the majority of people of this country contribute to the flow economic growth of this country? Because all that it means that we are not using the human capital that we are having. Efficiently, at least, or optimally. Oram Tamim spoke about what we do with advice to get. And perhaps associated with that question for me is the information that we get here and so on, and the discussions that we're having, do they really affect the budgeting, or are they ever considered?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps what must come to us as oral members is that, do we have a mechanism to check that it is being considered? Because it may be a tick box type of an exercise where we come and say, yes, okay, we met FFC, we met the TPO, we met the public, and so on. So what after that? Can you say that you think? Perhaps that may be a wasteful and fruitless exercise that we're involved in. So I'm just saying, perhaps it's any more about us, it's something that we should reflect on. But if you want to comment on that, please do. Then I would like to hear, I think as far as we are concerned, what's wrong with our economy? Now we know the debt and so on. If the debt and everything is reflecting the economy, which is not working. So I've got professors here, I've got doctors here. Let's hear what's wrong and what can be done. We do have slogans in positions that ours. We have that right, but you guys, your research and so on. And Let's reflect on that. Yeah, that's in your hands, prop, and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. You should have warned us, you can ask us more difficult questions today than what you asked us yesterday. But thank you for those questions. Let me start with the first one, because I think to my view over the institutional arrangements and our interactions with this committee is my understanding of this committee is opposed to have oversight over the appropriations. But also the appropriations is not only just about the numbers, financial numbers and the non-financial numbers. It's also to be able to look at what's the performance of each and every single sector and department as it relates to the policy priority that you articulate from the top, the new president and the state of the nation address. And then secondly, sorry, the Minister of Finance. And in that, in those two speeches and articulations through the ENE, which is the tool software that you have, which is called the Estimated National Expenditure, the budget review document, which is the one that we spoke about, the fiscal, economic and fiscal policy yesterday, those are the two documents with the Division of Revenue and Appropriations Act, which requires this committee to have oversight and to monitor and to see where there's a continuity with the policy decisions made, and statements relative to where the spending is going. So this committee's responsibility is also, I believe, in terms of the Money Bills Amendment and Procedures and Related Matters Act of 2009, also to make recommendations, or to make recommendations on the budget itself. Now, that in itself requires, for lack of a better word, it requires a high degree of political acumen. It requires a high degree of steadfastness, but it also requires decisiveness. Now, in terms of the operations of Parliament, the only thing that we can do, we can leave it at that and say to you, honourable members, that our job is to advise you on how do we see the macro budget, but also how do we see some of those key strategic sectors that have been highlighted over time. Now, getting to that also speaks to the successive recommendations that we have made to you, and also to the provinces, and how do you connect our recommendations with, because our recommendations we give 10 months before the time. You might not like the recommendations, national government, and I'm not speaking to the Treasury here, because Treasury just respond on behalf of the rest, because we're giving the recommendations to the national government, and we give the rest of the recommendations to the two houses of Parliament. And then it's incumbent then on the two to see exactly where our recommendations are being considered, and whether you agree with the situation in terms of the responses to the Financial Fiscal Commission's recommendations. We are limited at times about how the recommendations get dealt with. But if we don't have, because we serve you as parliamentarians, as the public representatives, we report to you. We don't report to any minister. I mean, some people think that we're reporting to certain ministers, but we don't report to ministers. We report to Parliament. It's the whole constitutional responsibility to that. So we're giving you our independent views. Some of the views has been negotiated, purged with different stakeholders that interact with us. But that's our job that we give to you, so we need to decide on that. So you do have the authority in terms of the law to make amendments. The question is, how are you going to manage it inside your own institution? That's the first thing around that. And the last set of issues that on the same question, I want to suggest, which I've tried the previous committee, and I'm saying previous committee, all the love in my heart, okay? We've been told by Parliament that we report to this committee at the FSC, okay? In terms of our own accountability arrangement for our report, is acceptable, and what I think is necessary. Now, what I would like to recommend, if this committee has identified the different sectors, but also which departments or votes it wants to engage with. So if you say economic services, and you want to particularly engage with matters on trade and industry, on infrastructure matters, economic infrastructure matters, and so on, then I would say again to this committee, you need to ask us, not that we don't have any work to do, but you need to ask us to be able to advise you of what we see in the presence of the department.
I mean, it has happened to us. We there's contentions between us, rather the chair and some of our executive branch members because of the things that we say. We made a couple of comments on tourism 2 years ago in the same building, same room. The tourism minister at that time didn't like what we were saying, and the same with the other departments. So we can give you that evidence-based information, action research information to be able to help to help this committee. So that's the one thing. Then Chair, I did say how are we going to respond to this. Then the issue of you see, the cost of parliament and the cost of provinces is almost like you bring back those issues which nobody wants to deal with properly. There's been around between 2 and 3, I call it 2.5 orders done about the role of provinces, right? And the cost of provinces to the fiscus, but the cost of provinces, the opportunities and the risk of provinces to the administration and service. And the audit was done, was completed, 2.5 of it was put on the shelf. So we don't know where that is now. Successive minister, responsible cost. The same has happened with Parliament. Lots of costing and pricing of the move of Parliament to Gauteng, to Madrid in particular, and somewhere in between the decisions got stuck. Now, those are the internal public statements, public policy statements, and the nation extent of the uncertainties of this getting created in the administration. And there's a number of that comes up. So you're asking, can we look at the cost of parliament and that? If this committee wants us to do that, then this committee must ask us. Remember, we serve you and the report to you. Then we could ask the speaker, who's so much interested also in this.
How do we ask them?
I think Rob should also advise into that.
I'm saying from here we can say that's what we need from there. It's not complicated. That's what we say here. And why in an official meeting and committee and so on.
Then the issue, so the point I'm making is that if we get a formal request from this committee based on the legislation and the rules of parliament, our job is to act on it, and we're probably going to ask you for time and space because of a range of considerations that we need to take inside the institution, because it will be a type of shock in the current administrative arrangement in the HC, and we will probably say to you, we can do this, but you're going to have to give us time, because this is not going to have an effect on our administrative outlook. On the question of the issue about the discussion about the team. On the question of the legal services in government, I think there's a simple issue here, Chair. I think it's a matter that needs to be raised with the Department of Constitutional Justice and Constitutional Development. Other than mentioning that, I said the key thing is to be raised to them, because the experience is that the internal legal services have not been provided that. But also, you know how the network works. Okay, so we'll leave it at that. Okay. What I'm saying, what I'm saying is that on the legal services, two things. One, and I'm speaking on my own experience as a former solo, is that the best thing to do is to approach the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. They need to be able to inform this committee as to why can't there be a rationalization of the services and go up into the constitutional development. Right? That's the one question. Add on to that, and it's in our own experience, is achieve legal advice accreditation. Because many other departments don't achieve legal advice. And the chief legal advisor will then source senior folks that can help with legal matters, constitution, state of affairs. Right? So that's a, and then what we sometimes underplay is the, there are lots of networks in around professional areas across the country. So there's also the element that people use their own networks. To get legal service into an institution and to advise on it. So there's a two-stream one. The one is the department that's done its own legal processes and how it's going to tie in legal services. And the other hand is it takes us to the chief state attorney office to do that. That's part of the point I was trying to make yesterday, because a contracted state that on a number of key professional services including on the provision of goods and services, we are contracted. And in many times, market is sometimes dependent on what type of service outputs you're going to get out of it. So that's a critical thing there. What are the consequential issues? Are they potentially risks to that? Are they potentially questionable, irregular behavior around that? Are potentially capture issues in it, how some part of the state gets captured since time immemorial. It's not a new thing. It didn't come with the last term. It's been here for a while. It's an open thing because in the nature of contracting of the state, there are lots of things happening in there. The reason why I want to answer the question on the School of Government, because I was involved with this with Minister Sisulu, when she was Minister of Public and administration, as a special advisor to her. We tried to reorganize the School of Government to be able to work on the Malaysian model, the Singaporean model, and also the French model, so that when civil servants join in the beginning the public service, they first go through a year program, and then based on that year program, there will then be an assessment where they get placed. The revolt came from inside the administration, and obviously supported by ministers who are responsible for higher education and basic education and pension. So within that particular forum, there are also not a common understanding about what the School of Government ought to be doing. The School of Government is also extremely outsourced. It's outsourcing, they're buying services from the universities to a limited extent, but to a greater extent they buy services from individual consultants who come to train. A classic is a training program for non-financial managers, which I and many others believe that there should never be a training like that, training for non-financial managers. Because if you're a manager, you manage the budget. You need to manage the expenditure. You need to know exactly where, what is the trend, etc. So I think what needs to happen is a conversation with the, because many of the things that have been said is going to happen, it's been happening for a while enough, and you don't see the terms of it. So that needs to be looked at. So it also gets caught in the whole DPSA and the policy outlook on public service and public service. On the discussion of the court and its impact on budget and fiscal implications, the reading of the document doesn't suggest that. I don't know what had happened, because in previous years they were always factored into the fiscal implications of certain court decisions. And I think what we can do, and I'm asking permission for that, is that we probably can do is to go back and see exactly how we can help this committee to adequately respond to this one. Because there has been a number of constitutional court cases. There has been high court case decisions. There's obviously also the classic case of the Khurdoms, which Khurdom died when nothing changed. But there is another classic one. There's a probably thought, and that you it will probably be great if you call the
For example, if you recall that the decision that the Constitutional Court took on the South African Social Security Agency, SASSA, and the contract payment contractor, CPS. And the Constitutional Court took a, I thought government was going to jump on, took a very important decision. The court ruled that any agency delivering services on behalf of the state immediately through that transactional relationship becomes part of that state in terms of that functional relationship. And by implication then, it created the opportunity for because it created structured decision making, structured judgment that allowed the government then to take over the CPS. But obviously there were other views taken to go back to the post office. So that was a golden opportunity missed in that. Chair on the top for provincial equitable share. Question that it looks at, it's got six components currently. Education gets 48% in terms of its weight in it, health 27%, institutional is going to do it, administration and other matters, and poverty, and there's a small bit of economic activity in the provincial equitable. Is equitable was your key question? We have different views about it. My professional view is that the equitable share, equitable allocation, is written in such a way that it actually is a conditional grant in this case. Because when the allocation letter gets written to provinces, it says, gives an indicative message about how much money is going to go to reach the particular program, and that in itself limits decision making at the provincial level. You for instance see that, let's say that the wage agreement follows through, then the typical equitable share would be X amount of money to allocate to the province, of which you must take care of wages, etc. Whether it's equitable is an open discussion, but there are conditionalities that are pretty clear, which are soft conditions. Some provinces are clever in terms of how they deal with that. The cut to municipalities, I'll leave that to Professor Paula and John and Dr. Nkululi. On the shift of the early childhood to from social development to basic education. Now, certain departments are established by legislation, and then there's a articulation as to what the department will do. Like for instance, the Treasury is by legislation established. Other departments are established by proclamation. By the president, others established by presidential minutes. Now, we think that this issue has been, the reason why it's not moving in the way it should move is that there needs to be a proclamation by the president on it, so that the function just moves. And this is one of those classic cases where policy uncertainty and the implementation of the policy is inside the administration between the three departments. So that would be our view on that one. On the devolution of transport, rail, symmetric allocation of functions, I'm going to leave that to the local government persons to speak to that. Trevor, Kululi and John. Is tourism and agriculture adequately funded? I'm going to leave you with this answer. If you're going to ask any department or any of the functions adequately funded, they're going to say to you, no, we don't have sufficient money over the years. But we also know, obviously, it's now compounding effect of the cuts in it. But you can only determine whether a function is adequately funded if you've costed and priced the function. And that's why we continuously raise the issue of we need to know what the size and shape of the public service. And the civil service to be able to know exactly where we have an where we can have an impact on it. So I think the only thing I can say to you is that it's best to check with each and every department, are you really adequately funded, have you costed and priced the function? So then you can see the difference between what has been costed as price and what the finances are. And then on that basis you probably know better. The debt and public wages I'm going to leave to John to answer. Are those the two concerns about you? The impact on adjustments on service delivery in provinces, we leave to them because that's part of their job to look at. The adjustments on these human settlements, movement of people, that's the same question. Allocation of you could also say element of race that point. But there was another point from the honourable member on the management of finances, especially in municipalities. Our view that we have taken in this year's last year's submission on the provision of revenue and previous years and our public conversations is that there's a need we're looking forward to what's the executive's articulation on the reorganization of the state. There is a view that we got 57 municipalities, of which there's a number of districts in it, which includes the number of metros, and we have 55 million people in a developed society. Do we need all these municipalities, given also just how far people live from each other? And then there's a question, is that do we need the Free States, for example, to be a province?
He's in shock now.
And if you have three big metros in Gauteng, in Gauteng, do you need a provincial administration? Now all these things need to be looked at in terms of how do we organize the state.
So
the degree of agility, the high degrees of agility, but to be able to be responsive and serve our citizens. Now clearly there's different views around it, and that's why we started to get out of that conversation, similarly to what the National Development Plan planning people didn't want to deal with in the beginning, because the issues of provinces did come up and they just leave that. You know? And hence we raised the issue of regional economies, regional networks, and regional touch. It's a classic where you can actually do that. Similarly, given the spatial arrangement, the places could possibly also do that. But those are the questions that we raise around that. But the municipal financing, we have a serious problem with, especially the management of municipal finances. But also we have quite a sizable number of municipalities which are highly indebted, you know. Across the country, you know, then you top that up with 87 dysfunctional municipalities. Now, that in itself requires conversation. I mean, we were hoping by us putting, because remember we also have a particular view on how the states to reorganize. We can't use the word reorganizing, but in our municipal restoring the position of municipal finances, we start to craft a view of what should be the role of the district municipality, given that the president is talking about and the interior talk about the district model. Now the district model has always been there. It's just that we needed to deal with the politics and the later questions and the networking of the network questions and the service delivery and the impact of that on education. And a similar question can be raised here in the Western Cape. I mean, it's the Cape Peninsula. I mean, many people say if you go beyond the mountains, that's not Cape Town any longer, you know. That's now another area. Where I would say if you go across where I come from, Bontebal, that's another place, you know. So those are the questions around that. The reduction of SOEs, I mean, there's more than 700 SOEs if you calculate all of it. We can't give you a policy decision on it other than to say that we're waiting on what the greater branch is kind of doing. I think it's the Warren Chairperson, State of Enterprise. But yes, there is, there's a need for rationalization. Yes, there's a need for retrenchment of some of the stuff. Yes, there's a need to do some deep cut, especially when it comes to those SOEs within provincial government, relative to those affected by national government. So we await the restructuring of that to be able to come back to Parliament and say, this is what we've seen, this is the implication, and this is the impact for the fiscus. On the horizontal and vertical in industries, ask Trevor and John and Lawrence, Professor Erasmus, to respond to that, because they know those issues. Honourable Member, on the supplanting of programs, I think it's best, Chair, if we can get via you, which programs are you referring to? Because the state is quite a matrix of different functional areas in that. So that we can give you a much more evidence-based and intelligent answer to that. So the waste reductions, John is going to talk to in terms of the bargaining council. The bailouts and the performance of state-owned enterprises. We can only do that if you facilitate this for us. Then we were able to see it. Treasury is talking in page 85. That's why I've been repeating the page one. Page 85 of the budget review, there are guidelines that determine approval of government guarantees and borrowing. Now, that's one way of looking at it. So, we've written to them. We're still awaiting them. There are claims it's an internal document. I'm saying, no, it can't be an internal document. If those guidelines have led to 460 billion rand exposure to the sovereign. So I'm asking you, on behalf of the Commission, if you want us to have to help you to look at those risks, that if you can get us on the same members, the guidelines. It's available. It should be available. If there's conditionalities to releasing the guidelines, then I must say to Parliament, we are giving it to you and there are conditionalities to it. And we ask for the same. And on the basis of that, we will then be able to, that's one set of issues. And then obviously we need to look at pursuing what sits in the credit agreement around that to be able to know whether there's going to be bailouts and the recovery issue. But we don't want to tangle there because we're going to say the wrong things and it's not a good thing. On human settlements and title deeds, the selling of that, I think Commissioner Fowler is actually point person there because he used to be city manager and also used to be MSC in the local government in the province. So city manager of Johannesburg, so we can speak to that and then others will add to it. The severance package budget for, I think it's the same issue around the wage board, if I don't get it wrong. There are questions to the possible answer on the education, the probability of the downward adjustments on it, what's the impact of that. And then there's a question on the INEP, local government, which was raised. Now, the big questions, not that the others are small questions, the questions that you're asking is around the economic and political perspective that is being taken on the the economic policy perspective of the country. The key question is that there was the RDP, and then there was GEAR. And we're feeling the consequences of GEAR right through the system. So is this different to what has happened in the early years of GEAR? Is it different to what has happened in 2008, 2009 in terms of fiscal cut? No, it's not different.
the introduction that suggested that no taxes, additional taxes should be introduced, is part of those injunctions that relates to the EU policy. Cut on public spending, especially administration, it's still in that space. But what is the contesting question there is the fact that there's still a degree of expansion around key social protection services, i.e. education, health, and social assistance grants. So I would say that we wanted to engage in this conversation, but there was on the river the contractors and expansionary economy, and then the policy questions to it. I say that if Honourable Chair, if you give us a 2 weeks, we will put to you a position on where the FSC stands. Because you must also remember we need to go through that process to be able to, as a commission, to say we are prepared to stand for this. We can do that. On the SONA injunctions, it was quite a heated conversation at times in our own space about whether ministers responded to all or what the president said. The minister responded to some, and we're still looking at it because we got a list. We'll share that list immediately. We'll ask Henry or Shane to send that list to Darren, where we also mapped out. Shane worked with me in the Sunday, so we mapped out exactly what is the president saying, so that you can prepare. We can give that list to you, then it becomes an effective assessment of what the president said and what has been put in the budget. But there is a kicking down the road on some of the areas. The question is which ones of it, and then we'll talk to you much more clearly on that. There is a point that I think I would like John to respond to when he speaks to the public.
If it is agreed to that problem, to the first one, you should also try to ring some bells to us as to where we should, as the committee, begin to knock some sense into such departments wherein they could meet, link up with the injunction.
Yes, we will do that. But we also would recommend, Chair and Honourable Members, that when you interact with the sectors, as opposed to a single vote, that you also consider calling us in to give you a better sense of what's going on. Because sometimes dealing with one single vote doesn't give you the total picture because there's a collateral impact of the different votes. And I think the way that the Treasury is organized with protection services, admin services, economic services, and social services, that's a good way of looking at this thing in a consolidated fashion. Can I, with your permission then, hand over to John also to explain the issue around the public service wage agreement relative to the credit wage agreement and how we see that actually connect into what is the current, what was the firm policy stance to where we are now in terms of the economy. But I think my assessment is that even the economic strategy, some people say it's a new policy strategy. My own view of reading it more than once, more than twice, it connects with the geopolitics. It's just that it's starting to push some of those issues more to the front to be So can we give John first and then we take it from John to Trevor and then
getting hotter and hotter, I don't know that.
Chair wants me to be contentious and I don't know whether I quite want to be that contentious. But I think, you know, there are two things that I want to talk about. And first, and that's got, I think, more to do with our relationship going forward. I think the one member refers to all the research that's been done and how does this committee engage with that. You know, my problem is the head of research, I've got all these questions and how do I engage with them, because they quite a number of areas. Some of them, if I answer them in the first way I want to, I'll get, you know, my head might roll. And so what I'm trying to say, some of them are difficult ones, you know, like the agreement with the commission, we've got to talk about them. So the question on, you know, how do we deal with the research and how do we deal with these reports that gather dust, but also how do we deal with the question in a more systematic way. And I don't know whether the members have talked about that, but you know, what I would perhaps prefer is that if you do one of these things, you ask your question and you come back the next day with, you know, with short answers, you know, we can dish out the work, but we can also, you know, have a considered opinion and not just off the top of our heads. But I don't know whether there's an appetite from the commissioners, and but I think my team is also, Mr. Akabe has also said that, you know, we sit in our offices and we read the initial reports and they gather dust. The point is, we don't know the opinion, but interest in the research. What exactly is your question? What evidence do you have and what evidence do you have? So I think, you know, that's the discussion that we must come up with. At some stage, what are your questions and how do we tailor our research? Tomorrow the Commission is discussing our research priorities, but clearly there are different priorities that also come to it. In this session also the Chair asked very difficult questions like, you know, the cost of exclusion, you know, and what is wrong with our economy, you know, and in an environment like this it would be a quick answer, but we need to think, how do we answer that, how do we prioritize that research. So I think we've got a bit of a discussion with the committee about how we do that. The other one is about the job of the committee, and so this is quite start general oversight, and so on, but then you start and ends with an amendment. The money bills amendment, procedures act says that this committee can amend the revenue revenue. So there's a number that says so much goes to the national. My reading of it, and my CEO will help me if I'm incorrect, is if you don't like the number going to national because there's too much money there for SOEs, you say you want that reduced and give that to provinces. So that is the power of my political party. So I think there are these big, long numbers. But that in the end is why we're here, because in 35 days the division of revenue law must be approved. This committee must pay whether they're happy with it. So I think that is a fundamental thing, and the FSC would also have to think whether we need to guide you on that. I think one of those issues on the job then and the amendment comes to this thing of whether any programs are ever cut, you know, and the reality is programs are very seldom cut, and quite often because they're important and we don't want to cut them, we rather want to fix them. But in some cases, the evidence is out there that programs multiply, and they never cut. So one example is the municipal capacity building. I don't have to say the municipal capacity building program, which is the government is introducing another one in the budget, the one to improve financial revenue management. And my sense would be in the job of this committee would be to say that there's evidence that capacity building doesn't work, to bring in another one, show us the preparation that we've done, that this one will now work. Why must we have new money? Why can't we take the money from the old one? But in any case, I might be talking out of turn, but the question was there about the job of the committee. I think that also relates to the question of the shift of ECB. So the president has announced that the executive intends to shift ECB. But there's a law that this parliament has passed that says that is the job of social development, of the Children's Act. The department and anything of social development is responsible. So I'm sure the proclamation has been stopped, that function hasn't shifted. And that means the money is now. And I think there, I also think the function of the written of parliament is to tell the department, don't talk about this shifting before. Is that all the laws have been amended. Because in the end of this parliament,
that says how things must be done and who's responsible for things. And after they said that the government can, the president can pose a shift and can do a proclamation, but quite often these can be complex. Well, proclamations can be very difficult because there are about 10 functions in the Children's Act or more. Are you now just going to take one function and say that is wonderful? So it might need legal amendments, which is the prerogative of course of law. So the one question a member left was, is this budget just going to end with debt and wages and nothing for goods and services and so on? I think that is sort of the alarmist rhetoric that we have to face, but it's not really that. Debt, we don't get our debt on control. Debt service costs will rise significantly. But our wage costs haven't been growing that explosive. You know, it's a 33%. In some departments it's high. It's 20% in education departments, but it's nothing strange. That's how an education department runs. It runs on teachers. In health it's about 50%. And that's not an alarm. You need nurses, you need doctors, and so on. So I think, don't think there's in our budget anything to say that this is run away out of control and there's no more money for anything else. It's something we have to watch, but there is a bit of alarmist rhetoric there that we must contain. So I don't think that is such danger.
Quite may also help when it comes to the some comparative studies. It comes to the subject, you know, you can also see, oh yes, when you compare, as you compare to countries, you see how much of an outlier we are.
Yeah, we'll investigate that and see some research. Some generalizations from the IMF about 2 years ago that our total wage still is not so high, but that we've got fewer people at higher pay. You know, so there's concern about high pay. But that's of course another thing where inequality bites us with our teachers as well. We've got a very unequal society. You can't pay your teachers that much less than you pay the elite because you've got to attract them and you don't get enough teachers. So this inequality also bites us in that way. You've got to pay professionals more to attract them because they have got alternatives. But I certainly think, as a team, we could have supported you better with comparative data on both the tax to GDP ratios and the staff ratios. So we do a bit of homework there. I don't know whether we can promise 2 weeks left. But we're trying to give you getting the lowest allocation, and that is right in the division of revenues, the smallest amount, but we must remember that the legal system gives other revenue sources to municipalities. So to about 75% of municipal revenue comes from their own sources, the property tax and the different fees and things that they can charge and so on. So you know, it doesn't mean because national accounts, because the budget only gives 9% to local government, that they were ignored. They're actually in some ways lucky. They've got more mechanisms and provinces to get in their own money. And I also think we must be careful about the cut to municipalities. So what we see in the numbers is that over the next 3 years, municipal funding is growing at just over 2% a year in real terms. What is cut
some of the conditional blocks. But overall, you know, even in these tight times, we managed to buffer the local government a bit. There's, of course, a lot of catching up to do and so on. But in terms of a tight budget, they are protected compared to the national government.
Thank you. Just to reinforce the point that John is making about the amount to local debt, I've worked fairly closely with Solomon and have been to municipalities around the world. And in many respects, many countries in the municipalities that they have, the power that they have, they are very few countries have municipalities as a sphere of government that's contained in the constitution. They are created in general in other places as a function of the state or the province, etc. So if there's a political disagreement as we had with Margaret Thatcher against London, when you had the mayor was called Red Ken, he was on the left. Ken
Livingston.
Yes. They dissolved London and the destruction. Now that, I think, is the problem. To that extent, municipalities have powers to raise funds quite significant. So in the case of Joburg, we received an equitable share, but we didn't worry about it much. Because the equitable share was really a small percentage of the total funding. So in small municipalities, equitable share is very important. But for metros, the equitable share is a contribution, but the ability to raise funds for services, to property taxes, it's a very important issue to know. The second area that was raised was really this question about how do we manage the fact that people come to the urban area and they have, they get an RDP house in the rural area that they consider home. Now it's actually something that is changing. It used to be a much greater phenomenon in the early 90s. Now it is shifting, and there's a notable shift that is starting to happen. People are becoming more urbanized in the sense that they don't travel home as much as they used to, and tend to stay in the urban area. So it is a phenomenon that's shifting, and it's a part of our development. But it is something that there is a need for government to track. And the main reason it is difficult to track is that national and provincial governments are on BAF, and the other system that is called the main BAF is the financial system, and the HRSA. Whereas municipalities don't have a system. So there's no common system among municipalities, and it's not linked to the national and provincial system. So it's been very hard to link certain things because you don't have the same system. So there's some need to start looking at that and saying, how do you address this particular problem? So for instance, when there's a law that says nobody in the state must get a contract, for municipalities it's a difficult question because they don't know who's an employee of the state other than a declaration that comes, you know, so they know who's in their local government, but they would not know who's in another local government or another part of the state. So just an aside on that issue in terms of addressing the question. Then there is one other question about the economy, which we've had a discussion this morning, but there is a point that is made in the presentation but it's also in the document that there has been a slowdown in the amount of money that is given to TVET colleges education and what the impact is. But in terms of the economy, I think there's one area that noted, and it's something that I know from an earlier life in the presidency, that there was a study done that showed that there are still, to a large degree, many more people in universities than there are in TVET colleges and the vocations. And one of the big problems we had around Medupi and the other expansions that occurred is that we did not have the artisans to do the work. So when it came to welding, all of those things, we imported welders from the Philippines, from Indonesia. In fact, some of the boilers were sent to Indonesia. And we didn't necessarily have the skilled people to supervise those skills. So the question is that we do need to address this question of vocational training and improving that sector in a much more significant way, and also getting, I think John mentioned, that people with degrees get paid fairly high salaries and kind of dictate in terms of how the economy works, that and the lower, what are considered to be lower professions, the artisans get much lower salaries and don't attract the people. So it's a big structural issue that we need to think about. One of the other points that I wanted to just touch on is that in the budget book, there's a reference to SARS restructuring that is being looked at. But the effect of the restructuring, there is no attempt to make an estimate of what gains it will yield. And those gains are not included in the budget, meaning that they don't reflect anywhere in the numbers. Now, once it doesn't reflect in the numbers, you can't hold people accountable for the restructuring. And that, I think, is an important gap in the document. That the reason that Treasury doesn't want to do it is because there's a risk. But if you make a decision that you're going to put money into a certain area, you should be able to say what is the gain. And so that Parliament can hold you accountable. It's just the one area that I think is understand. Is there any other area, Jefferson, that you thought of? Thank you very much.
Thank you, members and chair. You know, there's a huge case to be made for the improvement of our fiscal situation. And I think personally, in response to Member Peters' question, that public sector spending should and can be made more efficient. And there's a real need to be looked at misconduct and the eradication thereof. And efforts by National Treasury to publish in 2018 the framework on irregular expenditure and the procedures, disciplinary procedures in particular, that needs to be taken before any of these irregular expenditures can be condoned is pretty important in that effort. But what needs to be monitored, and which is a very good initiative, is this amendment of the Public Audit Act 2004, which came into effect on 1 April 2019, where the Auditor General can now refer material irregularities for investigation, but also issue certificates of debt to accounting officers should these remedial actions not be not be taken into consideration or not be taken action on. I think everybody wants to see consequence management. It pulls through to accountability and restores confidence in public spending, and that's what we want to see. And it would be a good thing to monitor this particular aspect to see whether the amendment of the Public Audit Act actually bring about the change that we would want to see in making our public spending more efficient in order to contribute to the fiscal situation that we find ourselves in.
Thank you, Chair. There are two issues. There was one question about as why didn't we relate the expenditure trend as well as the reduction, as the honourable member. And if you look at slide 19, that was an attempt to try and relate expenditure trends. In that particular slide, we show that there are some grants which were good performance in terms of spending is very, very good. 99%, 100% spending cuts. They were also cut. But on the other hand, there were some grants like the INEP, which was via ESCOM. Spending was around 60%, and that grant will be cut by 1.2 billion. So they are, if you also look at the health facility reserve by salarization plan, spending is around 60%, and that grant will be cut. So I think for us it is important to understand the logic behind some of these grants. It may not be that underspending as a result of negligence, but it may actually be as a result of capacity constraints for these municipalities to spend on that particular grant. So we have always said it is important to review spending before a cut is done. So we have seen the criteria which National Treasury is using, that we look at past performance in terms of spending. For the growth rate in this grant was very high historically, so that's why they were cut. But some cuts are understandable, considering that there is some vast amount of understanding. I know who has gone to the case in point, but if you look at the health facility reserve by calibration plan, it could be as a result of capacity constraints, that's why there is some understanding. There was another question on the evolution of the number of members left, the evolution of transport to municipalities, transport functions to municipalities. In 2014-15, FSC pronounced on that. We made in our submission, we made some recommendations, and our principal position was that the evolution of the transport function is an acceptable, it must go to the lowest competent level of government. It must go to the lowest competent level of government. That was our principal position, and we even recommended that it should pilot to be done in HMN and Cape Town on the evolution, but the process of when HMN is slow.
Prioritization of education. Oliver Joseph has left, but just to note that education is definitely still a priority. It gets the lion's share of resources at around 1/5 of total consolidated expenditure, which is way above what other functional items get. The reduction, the slight reduction that we're seeing over the next 3 years is as a result of the general need that we've seen in the slides to reduce and reprioritize spending. One potential cause for concern is that we're banking on a 1.3% reduction in compensation, which is related to that whole wage bill discussion. Now, if that doesn't pan out, we will see pressure on the provincial department of education. The other components that are being cut is the education infrastructure grant at 1.9 billion over the next 3 years. So we know that education infrastructure delivery has been poor in the sector, but that grant, surprisingly, has performed better than, say, your RCD grant, and we will probably see some further delays in infrastructure development in the basic education sector. In terms of post-school education and training, the reductions are mainly to the TVET colleges. So as Commissioner Fowler noted, definitely threatening the ability to produce the skills it required to sort of ignite growth. And I think the FSC in its submission a few years ago highlighted the historical underfunding of TVET colleges, and this looks set to continue over the next 3 years.
Thank you, Chair. Just the last call. I wasn't sure whether there was a question on horizontal and vertical industrialization. I get a sense that it's with what is the government's responsibility in industrialization relative to national. And I think what I would say is that we haven't worked through that. But if a province wants to get involved in that space and share on functions to be responsible, like someone in the consulting on the rail and the consulting of that agency, then the PFMA and ACTON providing us the opportunity to approach us to think through that. We don't have a view on it because the idea is that national policy provinces and municipalities especially when it comes to the shared functions. And there is an element of shock interpretation of those whatever system of services that provinces are responsible for. We sometimes don't want to talk about information on that. Chair, Commissioner Fowler, sorry, because I just wanted to spell something, because the point that one of the honourable members raised about the budget linked to the capital problem. Hold on, go. Because we don't sit in we only rely in terms of what the president says and what the Minister of Finance says and what comes off to it. We unfortunately, it would be great to sit in that and listen to what's going on, but I think all of our members have answered the question on waste and waste reduction and what are the aspects of development. If it didn't come up, the key thing is there are threats on the horizon from the trade unions on the whole question of the waste. So maybe the discussion is in the newspaper. So we don't know what the fallout is going to be. All we know that we have got a protected, protracted wage protest in the period of 2009-2010. And maybe the state should learn from that so that we don't have a situation where the public service has to stand for the 2 week period that we have been. General Inferno Mobility wants to the Minister of Public Service. I think, Chair, that effectively covers that. Commissioner Fowler suggested, and something I didn't think about, that it would be best for us also just to give you a short note on each of the questions raised, but it is also in addition to your minute, a report of how we service in this
And I think you could probably do that really. Yeah, we'll do it before our commission meeting, or by our commission meeting. Which I don't know the data.
Also, probably, that question on the cash flow.
Yeah.
I think you don't have to charge somebody now. For one would need some tax and income. So if you can also have it, I'm not in a hurry to get that.
In fact, the little chair, the question that you asked us, we said we're going to do it till Tuesday. So it's part of it.
But yeah, okay. I think thank you so much. Look, for some that I can remember. Remember this day, but let's go to attend item number 5.
Okay.
And let's see whether you have any questions on the 27th February. So would you get the correct answer to me? You need to have them? Yes. Okay. You get the correct answer to me. Page 1, 2, 3, you will send it to us, right? 4, 5, 6. Can I remove the meaning of the language from the key to the paper?
Yes, I move, Chair.
Yes, similarly, I'm not across the floor. I checked the IEC for you. I'm still living with the Democratic Alliance. I prefer if no questions were raised about that.
So you see what I was saying. Page 2.
I raised my hand. Okay, thank you very much, sir. I'll refer to the secretary to correct absent to apology. I was not absent, I apologize. Remember, this committee clashes with the state security committee.
Regarding the apologies and public market action, if we don't receive the apology for the meeting from either the member himself or support staff member, then we mark it as action. That's how it works. I wouldn't know personally where a particular member is when we are in a committee meeting. So if this member, if the members don't indicate to me, either via the admin support staff or personally, then it's marked as absent. So maybe in future, the members might just remember, it's either you inform your admin staff, please indicate, or when you receive the notice, I'm not available, then it will be recorded as such. If I don't know, then I can't say you apologize, they haven't apologized, which is the next.
I think we can add another one. You can use any other member to send an apology. So let's do that. Page 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, move on.
Yes, I move, Chair, for the adoption.
Chair, second the adoption.
Will be adopted. I think this, any announcement from you? No announcement. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. But as I said, I think we have to find a session where we should say, okay, how do we check these things that keep on talking about to make sure that the people are able to follow them. But that's why they pick up on one thing. On our oversight to ESCOM, there are a lot of things which came up, but one thing, we're told that there is a contractor which was overpaid by $4 million. And this committee said, would like to know exactly who did that, who was the recipient, what were the circumstances, what has happened to be reclaimed that money, okay? Picking up on this one. So if you have got a closure on this matter, now you raise these things and the remainder has only a thing. I think it becomes a fit for type of exercise. And I do intend writing to do that. Have you done that? So yeah, I think because I discussed with the team. The matter has already been written to them. We need a response for it. We can't just delay the issue for the sake of raising it and then there's no response. But I remember, thank you very much. See you next week.
Thank you.